Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution and Brave New Girl. And this podcast is all about helping you to become your calmest, happiest, and most confident self. Thank you so much for listening today. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Welcome back if you've listened before. Welcome for the first time if you're joining me here for the first time on the podcast. I am speaking to the very lovely Emma Gunn Wardner today. Emma Gunns, as she is known on Instagram, famous for the Emma Gunns Show, her brilliant podcast. She's also a journalist. And we actually met several years ago when I was on her podcast. It was when The Anxiety Solution had just come out, and I think it was one of the first podcasts I'd ever done. And she was just really, really lovely and has said some lovely things about my books in the past and bought them for friends and things. And so it was so nice to get to be the one asking her the questions this time. And I love this conversation. We really go there. We really get into Emma's story of her experience of anxiety and depression, what it took for her to finally get help. We talk about how to get out of victim mode. And honestly, this is something that I recognise in myself. Emma talks about this as well. It's not a very nice thing to admit to, but actually it can happen all too often that we can get ourselves into this mindset of being a victim, which really doesn't serve us. And we talk about this and how to get out of it. We discuss why confidence is not always what it seems. Don't be fooled, people. Lots of people that seem very confident, actually, you peel back the layers and we discover they're just as riddled in self-doubt and insecurity as we are. And we talk about her feel-good habits and also the deeper self-work that she's been doing that makes the biggest difference. So I think you're going to love this episode. I really think it's good to have these conversations, really honest conversations about mental health, where we just realise underneath it all, we're all the same. We all struggle with things. We all doubt ourselves. We all find it hard to ask for help at times. And, you know, it really does help us to feel connected, I think, within our common humanity when we remind ourselves of these things. So I've got some exciting things coming up in the next few weeks. And if you want to get involved, I would encourage you to sign up for my newsletter. I send out a newsletter every week talking about the podcast, sharing freebies, sharing tools, sharing the courses and the events that I have coming up. And I've got some exciting announcements coming soon. So I'd love for you to head on over to my website, www.karmayou.com. And you can enter your email address there to sign up for one of my freebies, or you'll see a way to sign up to my newsletter. And I'll give you all the details about the things that I've got coming up that you can get involved in. So let's get into the episode with Emma Gunn Wardner. Hello, Emma. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
Hi, Chloe. Thank you for having me. I'm really well, thank you. Really well.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I'm very excited to speak to you, seeing as I've been on your podcast, your amazing and very popular podcast twice. And I'm very excited to get to be asking the questions this time. Can you just let people listening know what it is that you do and a little bit about how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, of course. I'd be delighted to share that. It's very great. It's very interesting, I should say, not being in the driving seat to actually be answering the questions. So currently, my main job is that I am a podcaster. I host the Emma Gunn Show. But I guess you could say my journey towards this, or to this, started when I began my career in journalism nearly 20 years ago now. Gosh, feels like such a long time. And I started out on local newspapers, and I really just wanted to be where all the cool people were.
Why not?
And so when I was a kid and I used to watch things like The Big Breakfast, I would always wait. I don't know if you did this. When they did the news at like 10 to the hour, there would be an entertainment section and they would cover things like the L Style Awards or the MTV Awards. And I just wanted to reach through the screen and be there. And it felt like journalism was the easiest way to do that without any discernible musical or modelling talent. And so I had my sights set on journalism. So I began my career in magazines as a beauty editor. And I was on magazines for 10 years and I've been freelance for 8. And in that time, I have gone to all those awards. And I have been there and I have had a really interesting and varied career. And in freelancing, I've written for lots of people. I've done a lot of TV presenting. So it all kind of culminated just over, well, nearly 5 years ago now, with just thinking, there's something else I want to be saying, and not thinking that magazine articles are really the place where I could say it. YouTube wasn't the place that I could say it, and I was listening to podcasts. And so The Emma Gunn Show was really born out of sort of really feeling like I wanted to showcase conversations with people who didn't really get heard and who those conversations might be helpful to people listening. Because at the time, I was struggling with my mental health and I was depressed and I had anxiety. It was undiagnosed at that point. But I kind of very selfishly started the podcast as a way of putting myself in a room with successful people and trying to get them to share with me how they had overcome hardships so that I could use those techniques and maybe help myself and a wider audience, obviously.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And has it had something like 8 million downloads or 9 million? How many downloads has it had so far?
Not quite 9. Well, roughly on an estimate, because you know what it's like with these things. But yeah, I mean, over 7 million downloads, which is incredible. And every time I think about that, I just think, well, that can't all be me and my family. And I hope it continues to be, but it has been a really incredible personal and professional journey.
Amazing. I love it. We were talking just before we started recording about your experience of kind of life in lockdown and afterwards, and whether you might be making changes in your life as a result of that. Are there things that you kind of learned through this kind of experience we've all had?
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, it might be the same for you. I'd be really interested. But when lockdown actually happened, I felt that somebody saying, you can't go out of your house, but if you do, it's these things. I felt quite safe within the confines of the lockdown regulations because it was all very clear. And so I found it quite easy to work around that and to adapt my everyday and to transfer my work to working from home. And it made me realize that I didn't have to be constantly out doing things, networking, speaking to people, spinning all these plates in order for my professional life especially to maintain its momentum. And I think, I don't know, I'm sure it happens in other industries as well, but my frame of reference is really only the media. And I feel like sometimes it's about who you know, what you know, and the currency of what industry gossip you might know before other people. And it was very, very nice in lockdown to just focus on researching guests, reaching out to people and saying, I'd really like to chat with you on the show. And it was much slower, but no less efficient and no less effective. And I really enjoyed it. So as life has picked up the pace again, and as we are easing out of lockdown, it's that sort of conversation of, well, how do I take what I've learned from that lockdown experience and implement it moving forward and not just rush to go back to how things were before just for the sense of normalcy? And so that's where I am at the moment. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I'm very much in that place of, I know I'm going to go back to certain things, but what am I not going to go back to? What don't I want to invite back into my world?
I love that. I love hearing people's different experiences and interpretations. And I've heard a lot of people with anxiety saying, you know, I've been more calm than ever during lockdown because actually, things have slowed down and I haven't had to go out and be so on all the time or be going out and about all the time. Mm. I think, yeah, I'm definitely like you thinking, about, well, moving to the countryside for one.
Yes.
I think a lot of people, I saw in the paper the other day that like house prices in London are going to go down because no one's going to live in London anymore. We'll all move into the countryside. So there's that.
I can believe it. I can really believe it. I think it's, I was speaking to a friend the other day and they referred to it as the Great Pause. And when can you think where you actually get it in history, a time where you get to actually just sort of pause and reassess? And I guess it's how you look at lockdown, whether you see it as an inconvenience or you see it as an opportunity. And I very much right at the beginning thought, right, okay, this is an opportunity. What am I going to get out of this?
Yeah, definitely. And I love that you're just thinking about, what do I not want to go back to? You know, can we use this as an excuse and not go back to the old way of doing things and being that actually wasn't serving so many of us? Love that. You touched on just there, just earlier, about you've had your own kind of experiences of anxiety and depression and how, you know, for a while it wasn't diagnosed. Could you share a bit about what was your experience with that and how did you then sort of get it diagnosed or go and get some help for that? What was your journey with that?
I think looking back now, I have been affected by it my whole life, especially anxiety. And I even remember things like going to go and sit a school exam at the age of 6 and just hiding, being really scared of the headmaster and hiding behind my mother. And therefore, then when I then went to go and, you know, answer the multiple choice questions or something, I just couldn't engage with it. And obviously, I didn't realize that at the time, and it was the early 80s and things weren't as they are now, and those things weren't necessarily looked out for or identified. And so that was definitely running underneath the whole time, my whole life. There was always an undercurrent of anxiety. And then looking back as well, I think there was also depression. And I sort of, you know, if you imagine a graph or like a timeline, I think you can see, when I look back, I can see where it was spiking, where it wasn't affecting me so much. And I think what essentially happened is, when you are navigating life through the lens of depression or anxiety and your head is in that space, whatever that might look like for the individual, you're not presenting the best version of yourself and you're not necessarily enjoying anything that is happening. That was certainly my experience. And I think I constantly had this state of red alert where I thought people were trying to get one up on me, or people were talking poorly about me, or people just didn't like me. And it was just, it was very, very much almost like a victim mentality, which I dislike intensely about myself, about the fact that that was how I used to identify. So it was going up and down, and it was going up and down. And I'm not sure working in a competitive media job was necessarily the best soil for me to spend many of my formative years. But essentially what happened was about 5 years ago, I went on holiday with a couple of friends and I was so tightly wound. I was going through a lot personally at the time. And I mean, looking back now, I definitely ruined that holiday just by being uptight, just by being moody, by not really being that engaged. And I was sharing a room with my friend Katie, and she said something to me which sort of at the time felt quite cruel, but actually it was definitely something I needed to hear, where she said, "Emma, I've never known anyone who just doesn't have coping mechanisms in the way that you don't. Everything is such a big deal to you." And that was really And it did come from a place of love, and she is that kind of a friend. Like, she doesn't mean it in anything negative. But I was crying in bed, sobbing, just unable to really function, and ruining a perfectly nice holiday, thank you very much. And that was also the holiday where I remember waking up in the morning, going into the bathroom, and I didn't recognize myself in the mirror. And I thought, something's definitely not quite right here. Like, I looked, it was like looking at a stranger. I didn't recognize my face. And so she said, "I think you need help." And I'd always seen people saying, "You need help," as them trying to brush you off because they didn't want to deal with you because you were annoying them. But on this occasion, I thought, you know what, I really do. And I started seeing a therapist, a counsellor, and had talking therapy. And there were a mixture of disciplines in there. Sometimes I would be like, oh yeah, that was a bit of CBT. Other times I wasn't, you know. And that we did that for 18 months, and that was utterly transformative for me. It was really, really incredibly helpful. And so that's why now I feel like I'm able to talk about it from a position of it no longer has a control over me. Mm. And I don't know if you, I don't know if you feel like this. I sometimes feel like people can sometimes take a mental health diagnosis like depression or anxiety, and it almost becomes an identity. And my way of looking at it is, yes, I was affected by it. It has shaped me, but I don't want to, I personally don't want to identify as somebody who has anxiety and depression, because I feel like then I'm giving it roots.
Mm.
But having said that, I'm very aware that it takes a lot of work to keep it at bay, but I know the color and the shape of it and the feel of it. And so if any of that familiar feeling comes into my mind or even my physicality, I just think, right, down tools and go to the things that will work, go to the mechanics that will help you spiral away from that, not within it.
I think that's such an interesting point about, you know, not letting it define you almost, not saying that it's something that's going to go on forever. And it might be something that you may experience at times in your life, but it doesn't. I think sometimes people can get really, you know, when we're really caught up in a cycle of depression or anxiety, we can feel as though we're going to be like that forever and we're never going to change. And actually, I think part of those issues is that kind of little voice that says you're never going to change, you're going to be stuck like this forever. And actually knowing that there is a way out, there are things that you can do. And actually when you're noticing those signs kind of creeping in that maybe you're getting out of balance, to go back to the things that really help you. It's also really interesting what you said about the kind of the victim kind of role that we can get ourselves into. And I recognize that as well. It is kind of, it might be about blaming other people or saying, why does this always happen to me? And actually, you know, we can kind of almost recreate our problems by staying in that mindset. And it's horrible to hear that. No one wants to hear that kind of staying in that victim mode is kind of, you're perpetuating it, but it can be a bit like that. And if we can step outside of it and ask for help, you know, having the courage to ask for help, you know, that's such a big thing in itself sometimes, knowing that it's okay to get help and going down that path is sometimes totally the best thing that we can do for ourselves.
It's a kindness.
Yeah. 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 And So you mentioned about kind of when you notice feelings kind of creeping in, you down tools and you go to things that work. What are those things for you then that you will turn to?
I've tried to make them quite simple and free. So it might just be, right, how am I feeling today? I'm feeling a bit, I'm not a big fan of the word triggered, but it is appropriate here. But like, if I'm feeling triggered by something, right, what do I need? Do I need to be around people as a form of distraction? Do I need to ring a good friend, or do I need to go and meet up with a good friend, you know, lockdown permitting? Or do I need to just be a bit quiet and a bit still and read or just go for a walk? Like, am I, because I think we can sometimes get too caught up in knee-jerk reactions, and it's rare that one makes a great decision in a knee-jerk reaction. And so I try really hard when I feel like something's getting at me. Sometimes you don't even know necessarily what it is. You can just suddenly, I can sit at my desk some days and think I'm not breathing properly, or my lower back's hurting, which for me is like my adrenals are on fire. So then it's like, right, stand up, have a stretch. What's on your nerves? And I had a great guest on the podcast a little while ago called Jeff Thompson. And we had a very long conversation on tape, but off tape we were talking about the things that trigger you. And he gave me a great piece of advice, which is just, if something gets to you in that way, run at it and confront it. because then it, because the closer you get to it, the smaller it becomes, trust me. And so it was a very useful piece of advice, because it could be that I know there's an email that I've got to respond to, and I don't really want to because I'm a bit worried about what the person might say in reply. Or it may be that I have a deadline looming and I've been putting it off and it's a bit tedious, or any of those things. So then I just will clear my desk, put the inconvenient things or the things that I know I'm putting off for whatever reason, and I just do them straight away, and it lifts immediately.
That's so such a powerful idea of running towards the things that are triggering you. And for people listening, I don't know how many people sort of understand this idea of triggering, but it's like when something comes up in your life and it kind of taps into something within you that very often will link back to an old wound, something from the past. Mm. And the temptation can really be in those moments to sort of blame the other person or say the world's against you. But if we can see that trigger as a sign to look at ourselves and think, right, what is this that needs to be worked through? What needs to be healed? And as you say, kind of running towards it, that's how we can overcome it.
Totally. I mean, if you think about Twitter, for example, how many times do you see on a social media platform somebody say, I wish people wouldn't do X, or when someone's going through X, the worst thing you can say is X. I hate it when people say X. And I just look at that and think, for me, that is a tweet that tells me that you need to learn how to cope with when people say X, not that you need to tell the world via social media that you would prefer it that people stopped doing that thing, because that's unlikely to happen. The only thing you can control and potentially change is how you react to it.
Yes, I love that. such a good reminder to us all. Yeah, let's remember we can't change other people. We can't change what other people think, what they do. We can just change ourselves. We can look at ourselves. What's triggering us? What is it that needs to be worked through within ourselves?
Yeah, and sometimes that can be uncomfortable, and sometimes that can get a bit messy. But ultimately, it will lead to, for you, I think, for the individual, it will lead to a place that is calmer, kinder and quieter and less triggered, which is what hopefully we're striving to get towards.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So you went and had those kind of 18 months of therapy. Were there other things that you tried? Were there other things? I know that you've got a series on your podcast all about feel good habits. And I was wondering, are there other kind of, and I came on the podcast and kind of shared some slightly more esoteric maybe, or
yours
strange
are brilliant,
habits.
They were brilliant. They were so, so good. They were so, so good. I think when it's like, I've talked about insomnia on my podcast. I'm sure you've covered it too. And I think somebody can say to you, oh, there's a great pillow spray and I just sort of think, okay, a pillow spray might work, but actually what you need for a pillow spray to work is to have your sleep hygiene. So maybe that's a routine, maybe that's not using your device for an hour before you go to bed. There's lots of little things in place. So I feel the same about mental health. I feel that therapy is one thing, but it's a really solid foundation upon which you can build. And so within that, I was meditating for a while. I have to admit, it's not something that sticks. Exercising is really helpful for me. Reading is really helpful. I do breath work. But all of these little things that sit on a very solid foundation of having actually confronted a lot of the big stuff with a mental health professional, so that when it comes time for a feel-good habit, it can be something like, I don't know, just listening to a beautiful song, or just slowing down, or doing a bit of that breath work. And also, I think the other thing is I used to look very much for external validation, for people to tell me you're doing okay. And actually, in actual fact, if I'm really honest, it took an external opinion for me to actually address my own mental health issues. Rather than me saying I need help, it took somebody else to say it for me to act on it. And so one of the things I try to do as a feel-good habit is to say, what do you need right now? What can you do for you right now that will make you feel good? And sometimes it's, I don't know, listening to One Direction. Other times it's lying on an acupressure mat. Another time it might be honestly just zoning out in a book. But I try to ask myself, like, what do you need? Do you need to go into London and be amongst things and be with a load of your friends who you literally can't keep up with? Or do you need the polar opposite? And then try to plot my path towards that thing.
Yeah, that's such a good question for people to be asking themselves, you know, when maybe on a daily basis, you know, asking yourself, what is it you need that day? Or particularly if you're noticing feelings coming up that you'd rather not have, seeing what you need in that moment. I thought it was really interesting what you said there about, you know, all these habits are kind of, yes, they can be helpful, but actually the thing that really makes a difference is going into the kind of, is it like the root cause for you, would you say, of things, or processing? What was it that the therapy gave you that was more kind of meaningful or more helpful?
That's such a good question. I think the best way I can describe therapy, and I'd be really interested to get your thought on this as well, is imagine that every time you have a thought or a feeling, somewhere in your brain, and like a machine spits out a ticket or a piece of paper, like a printer. And so, but it's in a room. And I felt as though my entire life, these tickets and bits of paper have been spitting out of this machine and just flying all over the place. And what therapy did is it was like going in with an organizer, and we sorted out the papers, we put them into bundles, we put some in folders, we put some in the bin, you know, we shredded some of the stuff. We, ranked them in order of importance, and we organized them in a way where they were linear and I could understand them. So now it's not a room full of random bits of paper that have just been spat everywhere. It's a really nicely organized library of thoughts and feelings that I feel like I understand. And so that's what I feel that therapy does. So I feel that's what the foundation is, so that when anything else happens, you can very quickly go to your internal Dewey Decimal System and find what you need in order to handle that particular thing that might be happening to you at that moment. But I do think I can't imagine, and I envy anybody who was able to just live their life and be able to do that naturally. I do feel as though that kind of process is something you need someone to hold your hand, whether it is a hypnotherapist, a therapist, a counselor, a talking, that whatever it might be for you, the right thing, because everybody's going to be drawn to somebody different. But I feel that that's ultimately what it was able to help me do. Organize my thoughts, but also help me understand who I am.
Mm-hmm. I love that analogy of just tidying and organizing. It's such a silly idea that we have in society that we're supposed to just be able to sort ourselves out and do it on our own, and kind of like the human mind is the most complicated thing in the universe. Mm-hmm. And yet we're supposed to be able to just handle it and deal with this mystery that is life on our own. And of course, I think most of us are going to need help with that at some point or another. I know a few people who, one of my friends, she just compartmentalizes things. She's probably the only person that I know that doesn't need therapy, but most of the other people, I would say, probably have had therapy or probably, you know, could do with it at some point or another. So, yeah.
And I've definitely always been attracted to friends who have been like that person who seem like they've got it sorted, who they'll hear something and go, well, you know what that means, don't you? And I'm like, what? What does it mean? Because I just took them at face value. You've seen The Matrix. What did I miss?
Love it. Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like for you, it's kind of organizing and processing things, making sense of it, getting to know yourself. There's so many things that can come out of therapy. I think it's probably different for everyone. I know for me, a big part of it was getting rid of the shame. I had things that were not even that bad. I just thought if I said it out loud, I would die. Or if someone knew what I was really like, they would be just horrified. And honestly, there's nothing that bad. But at the time, it really felt like that. And just saying it out loud, having it be witnessed, saying, Chloe, you're actually normal, you're okay. Mm-hmm. I think that was massive for me. So But we're basically just telling everyone to go to therapy, I think, right now.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't think twice about going to a diet club if you wanted to lose weight, or you wouldn't think twice about going to a personal trainer if you wanted to build muscle or burn fat. You wouldn't think about all of the people that we outsource stuff to, and yet we're still in this shame mindset about outsourcing, managing our mental health. When, as you say, the brain is an incredibly complicated organ, and yeah, I think everybody could benefit from it in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to ask you as well about confidence and whether, I mean, it sounds like from what you do, you kind of need to have quite a lot of confidence to go, you know, talking about all the sort of events and things that you've been to, and having a podcast takes quite a lot of confidence, I think. How did that get affected sort of throughout your experiences with anxiety? And are there things that you've kind of learned about confidence, you know, through what you do?
It's such an interesting question. And I, again, I tried to trace it back to, and I remember saying to somebody a little while ago, I am riddled with insecurity, even now. And yet that's not how I appear. Yet there is a massive disconnect between how people see me and how I see myself. So if I walk into a room and I give a presentation or I host an event, you can bet that I am absolutely racked and riddled with nerves. But something allows me to do it. And I just assume it's adrenaline. So I used to do live TV, used to do live shopping TV. And that is like a real switch it on, switch it on, switch it on, switch it off. And those nerves really get you through it. And I remember somebody saying to me, if you don't have nerves, you shouldn't be doing this, because they are what can make people come alive on air. And so with confidence, I honestly think I felt so overlooked as a kid, because I went to a school where you had to be either intellectually very bright or sporty, but preferably both. And I was neither. And so I was loud in order to get noticed, and then just became incredibly annoying. And so my confidence has always been phantom confidence, but not for me, but other people often say, you seem a lot more confident, but now I know you, I see that there's a real push for you to present the way that you do. But I still don't necessarily understand that disconnect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such an interesting one, isn't it? And it's amazing how many people will say the same. In fact, I would almost say almost everyone that you speak to, you know, when you get below the surface, there are these insecurities and nerves and self-doubt and the inner critic, and actually maybe that's just a normal part of being human, rather than what we often make it mean in ourselves, is that we're kind of not enough, or we should be better, or why is this happening. Actually, maybe it's just normal when you're putting yourself out there to feel that extra kind of energy, or to, when you're expanding and growing, to have this sense of self-doubt because you're doing something new, or you're doing something that's expansive for you. So yeah, I'm always strangely comforted, not that I want you to feel insecure inside, but I'm always strangely comforted when people, you know, who, you know, are so confident on the outside actually say, you know what, I sometimes struggle with this as well.
And I think as well, I remember being at school and seeing, you know, the bigger girls, because I went to an all-girls school, like going up and presenting, or on, like, you know, if we had fates or something, you know, getting on the microphone and thinking, oh, if I could just be like them, I'd be super confident and pretty and everyone would like me. So I think a lot of that comes out of mimicry of just, so the confidence might not necessarily be there, but you just, it's that thing of, if I do that thing, then I will be confident. But yeah, never the twain shall meet. They haven't quite joined up.
Yeah. Such an interesting one. Such an interesting one. I wanted to ask you about one of the videos that you did on your IGTV recently, where you're sharing about breast reduction surgery that you had. And I just thought what you were sharing was so relatable. Obviously, a lot of people won't have had that specific surgery, but the kind of the message behind what you were sharing, I think so many of us can kind of relate to. Could you share a bit about that?
Of course, yeah. So this time last year, I had breast reduction surgery, and it very much was a surgery I was a great candidate for. I just want to say that I had a great surgeon, and I was a really good candidate for it because I had disproportionately large, heavy, cumbersome, inconvenient boobs, and I didn't want to have those anymore. But in and amongst my depression and anxiety, I would say that food had become a comfort, and so therefore had become somewhat toxic in my life. And I was very aware that I remember somebody saying it to me years ago, and I'm going to fluff it up, but it was basically like, what you eat in private, you wear in public. And I remember being quite shocked by that, but it really sort of hit home. And because that's how I felt. And I'm just want to say this. I know that this topic can be very triggering for people, the topic of weight, and I'm certainly not casting any judgment. But for me personally, I felt very uncomfortable in my skin because I knew that the excess weight I was carrying and have done for most of my life was as a result of a self-sabotaging behavior of relying on food for more than just sustenance and staying alive. I was relying on it for comfort. There was an element of greediness, and it was just if I said to you, I feel really uncomfortable and bad about myself if I have a red triangle on my hand, but every day you saw me colouring in a red triangle on my hand, you'd be like, Emma, what are you doing? And that's how I felt about my body. So I had a lot of shame about that. I always dressed to camouflage myself, and I dressed to hide, and I didn't want to be seen. And if I had my picture taken, I would honestly scream from the neck up at people because I just was so embarrassed. And so this has gone on, I'm 42 now, this has gone on for years. And I just didn't want to continue living like that. And when I had the breast reduction, I genuinely thought that would change my body and that suddenly I would look the way I wanted to look. And so it was a massive anticlimax to realize I didn't. But it was an incredible wake-up call, because doing something that drastic, and again, I don't regret it. It was a great surgery. I'm very happy with the results. But it was a real wake-up call to, again, like we're talking about mental health, this is an inside job. The call has been coming from inside the house. If you want to fix this, you have to run towards it and address it head on. And that was when I read this book that I mentioned in that video called Brain Over Binge by Katherine Hansen. And it allowed me to see my relationship and my behavior around food from a distance, almost as like from above myself. And it was like a software update. I went to bed, I read it in a day, I went to bed, woke up the next morning. And since then, my relationship with food has been completely different. Not perfect. There are still days when I have to think, you know, the family pack of crisps need to last you a week, Emma. Don't go and get another bag. But I can see it for what it is. Whereas before I didn't. And so I would give in to all of those impulses.
Mm-hmm.
So it was overeating, essentially.
Yeah, I think, and what I think I really took from your story was, you know, we can all probably resonate to doing that, as in thinking, right, when I get this thing, I do it with like, when I find like the perfect pair of jeans, or when I get that serum that's going to make me more glowy or whatever it is, then I'll be, you know, that's going to like fix me up and make me feel better. Mm. But actually the real job is, as you say, an inside job of looking at what is it that doesn't feel enough, or what is it that's out of integrity within ourselves, or where are we sort of sabotaging ourselves? And if we can, you know, heal that, then that's what's going to give us that real satisfaction, rather than kind of chasing these external kind of things and hoping that they're going to fix us or help us to feel better.
Yeah, and I think I just realized I had been living half a life because of it. And I had assumed, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, I assumed that people who were smaller than me, or who had the body I would, you know, would want, were living a better life than I was. So I'd almost sort of imprison myself within this mental and physical prison of, you can't live your best life because you're not worthy. So it was there was a lot of attacking coming from within. There was a huge amount of self-sabotage. And I guess what was brilliant about the surgery was it being the wake-up call. Because it was not cheap. There were 6 weeks of recovery. It's obviously general anaesthetic, it's a major procedure. So it was the thing that sort of threw the situation into a stark clarity that was then I was able to move forward and address it, mm-hmm. which was really, really helpful. I'm very grateful for it for that reason.
Yeah, definitely. And I just wanted to say, I just noticed from something that I was saying that I'm almost making it sound like if you can just heal yourself, it's an easy job, and then you'll be healed and then you're done and fixed. But it is such a process of continually being kind to yourself, learning about yourself, becoming aware of your triggers. It's not, I think it's a lifetime's job to do the inside job of kind of happiness and finding your own path. I didn't want to make it seem like it was like super easy.
No, it's a life's work, but I think when you do, I certainly am not a completed project and I would never say that I am, but I think once you start on this, like you say, once you start sort of addressing the internal stuff and once you start to get to know yourself, you do feel the difference and life does feel better for it. So I know what you're saying, but I do think your point is completely valid.
Yeah. So basically, listeners, get started on this journey because you will notice a benefit. And I think once you notice yourself changing and you realize it's possible, that's quite motivating, I think, to continue to know that it is possible to change.
Yeah, we're very malleable. We're not concrete. We can be molded. And so, if you are currently, as I was, like really emotional and not able to cope with anything, that can be changed. And those coping mechanisms are within your grasp.
Yes. I want people to write that down on a post-it and just have it on their mirror. I'm just looking at the time. I don't want to keep you too long, but I wanted to ask you about, where people can find out more about you and what you're up to. Where they can find your podcast, etc. Can you share a bit about that?
Yes, of course, gladly so. So the Emma Gunn Show is available on all good podcast platforms, probably not too far away from Chloe's podcast. And there's emmaguns.com, and on social media, I'm Emma Gunns. My surname is Gunnar Wardner, and so my nickname for a while has been Emma Gunns, and it was too long for Instagram, so I became Emma Gunns. So it's just become a little bit of a thing. But there's a great Facebook forum for listeners of the show. And but Instagram is probably where you see the most of me. And the podcast is just I personally, as you can tell, like it's been such a... I joke that the podcast saved my life. And I sort of half joke because, as I said earlier, when I was in a really bad way, I was able to surround myself with really positive, inspiring people. And I don't think it's any mistake or accident that the way I am now is a culmination of those conversations, as well as my own therapy and other things that I've done. But yes, Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, that's where you can find the Emma Gunn Show. And I'd be delighted to have you over there.
Head on over. I'll put all the links in the show notes for everyone as well.
Thank you.
Emma, thank you so much for speaking to me. I've loved everything you shared and I hope people will get a lot from it. And thank you so much.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to speak to you, Chloe. Thank you so much. Your podcast is fab, so it's such an honour.
You have been listening to the Karma You podcast with me, Chloe Bretheridge. Don't forget, you can download loads of freebies for anxiety and confidence at my website, karmayou.com. You can also find out about my app and my one-on-one sessions.
Please do subscribe to this podcast in the Apple Podcast app. And if you have enjoyed it or found it helpful, please leave me a review. It makes a massive difference to helping the podcast get discovered by other people. And come on over and find me on Instagram. I'm hanging out there every day. You can find me at Chloe Brotheridge. Let me know what you thought of this episode. And please do share it with anyone who might need to hear this today. So I'm sending you loads of love and I hope you have a brilliant week ahead.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.